Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Steve Long. I'm here to introduce my debut novel, There's a Somebody, and I am joined by Rob, and help me out, Yardumian?
Yardumian, that's right.
All right, I did that right. Well, Rob, let me mention my book, which is thematically, well, I was interested in the stories, the histories that we make up for ourselves. And sometimes there's a tragedy in your life, or sometimes people just act badly, and I think try to justify that action. So that's kind of was the impetus for my book. And specifically, it's about a young fellow who abandons his pregnant girlfriend in the delivery room, and then the justification, the story that he tells himself for part of the book, and then realizes that this was just a big mistake and then tries to make up for it. So I wanted to say I've been reading your book. I love it, and I love the cover. So at some point, maybe you could kind of explain that to us.
Yeah, that sounds great. So my book is called The Sound of Songs Across the Water. It's also my debut novel. In hearing you talk about the thematic aspects of your book, you know, there's a little bit of a rhyme, I think, going on in my book, even though in terms of plot and character, they're quite dissimilar. But the main character of my book, Riley Oliver, is a guy who's at 35 years old, living on the East Coast, is dissatisfied with the path that his life has taken, and in particular, he looks back to a moment 15 years earlier where he was in a band as a youngster with a friend of his named Will Taylor, and they were both enormously talented kids, and their band had a lot of success, and they took an ill-fated trip to New York City to play CBGB's one night, and a lot of things went wrong, and I don't want to give away too much that happened, but
I was going to say, don't spoil it. I'm not there yet.
I won't, because that's sort of one of the linchpins around which the plot of the book turns. But there is an act in Riley's past that has enormous repercussions for him, for Will, for various people that they knew at the time. And then when they get back together 15 years later at the very beginning of the book, this is what they have to work through. So there's mistrust there, and a lot of what they're dealing with for the rest of that summer in 1995 is, well, look, you know, this thing happened between us. What did it mean then? What does it mean now? And how do we move forward from that? So I think thematically, you know, both of our novels begin at a similar place where somebody makes a bad decision and then...
I was going to say they're set about the same time period, which I think is interesting. And I, as you were talking, I was thinking about one of the lessons that I've heard is when you're writing character, when you're plotting this, get your character up a tree and then throw rocks at him. And I think we've both done that.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting analogy. You certainly hear a lot about you need to put your character in trouble and then and figure out. You learn a lot more about him or her as they react to that trouble and then work their way through it for whatever time period. You know, it might be a day, it might be 10 years, whatever the time period is that your book encompasses, like you drop that stone at the beginning and then he's sort of surfing those ripples, like, all the way out for the rest of your book.
Yeah. You know, I read, I know that you have an MFA, and I took a different path, but I think I was blessed to have been mentored by Elizabeth George and, you know, as I'm sure you've done, gone to the various writers' conferences. I've been to Squaw Valley a couple times. And I think both of us, well, let me say for me, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I suspect this is true. I think I read primarily for entertainment. And so, you know, you want the work to be engaging. But I can't help reading also from a technical standpoint. How did the author construct this? How did they put it together? And I was thinking of, again, at Squaw Valley, one of the instructors said, start your story in a broken place. And again, I was looking at the similarities between what you've done and what I've done, and mine is certainly not autobiographical, but there are elements of setting and so on that are familiar to me. In reading this, I suspect that you are a musician and have that background.
A little bit, yeah. I think that's an interesting.
You speak very knowledgeably, anyway.
Well, some of that is experience, and some of that is art. I think to go back to starting your story in a broken place, that's an interesting method. I suspect that's also something that would work well for short fiction, which I did for many years before starting the novel, because it's a more compressed form. You've got anywhere from 5 to 30 pages to
right.
to tell the story of a moment, and then the repercussions of that moment. So.
Right. You can't be messing around.
Broken place. So, but a novel is,
yeah.
by definition, a longer form. So the repercussions bear out over a wider period. But I did want to touch on the idea of setting and experience. I think that's an interesting notion, and I was curious to get your take. You know, one of the other things that we're always taught when we begin to learn the craft of writing is a phrase that I'm actually not a big fan of, which is write what you know.
Sure.
And, you know, that always rang a little false to me and still does, frankly. I'm not a big believer in that dictum, but I certainly had a lot of people tell me that, and it came up in workshops a lot through the years, right? Now, having said that, there are aspects of this book that are more from my experience than from any amount of research or imagination. So I
sure.
did live in that neighborhood in Los Angeles for many years, in Las Feliz and Silver Lake, where Will Taylor
right.
lived, where the bulk of the story takes place. So, I was living there when I started the novel as well. So, you know, I don't think that's a prerequisite by any means, but it made it easier to dispense with, number one, having to do a ton of research to make sure that
sure.
you've got your setting correct and true enough. And number two, just that worry you have that I'm describing a scene where they're driving down the street and they're going to dinner, they're going to have a drink, and then they're coming back home. It's a simple scene. But if I haven't lived there, how do I know I'm getting it right? You know, there's any number of times I can go to that city, wherever my book is set, and I can research the neighborhood where my family lives, which is what I'm doing for my new book, in San Francisco. But that's a place I've never lived. So I'm guessing that I'm getting it right, but there's always that little nerve at the back of your head that's saying,
right.
maybe that isn't what
well,
it feels like to live in
sure.
that neighborhood and drive down that street. So I sort of took the path on the first book of using some things that I did know a little bit about. So the setting was one. I spent 10 years working in the music business, so in earlier incarnations of the book, there was a lot more sort of music business stuff in there. I finally stripped it all out, but
right.
there was a certain amount of verisimilitude in there from that. And then I have written songs and spent a little bit of time in the studio, so I had a sense of what that felt like as well. And I'm wondering,
mm-hmm.
in your approach to a first novel, which may or may not be different from subsequent novels, you know, how much of what you had in your past did you draw on versus aspects that you thought, okay, this is an interesting development that I'm going to put in here, but I don't know anything about it. So how do I approach making that feel just as true as the stuff that I do know something about?
Sure. So, you know, I'm thinking of a couple things. One is, just because it's a fun saying, I've heard that you don't have to kill somebody to write a murder mystery. You don't
right.
have to have done that. But you can, if you had a pet die, you know the anguish, and just juice that up, just amplify it. So that's something, and I think we all do that. But I'm struck by the similarity of your approach and my approach, and that is I wrote this first novel in the period that I was awarded a grant from the Elizabeth George Foundation. So I knew I had a year, and for people who think that a year is a long time, I think you'll back me up, it's not. And I didn't want to take that time not writing. I wrote every day. I wrote 5 pages every day. And even at that, at the end of my year, because of rewriting and so on, I still had a little cleanup to do. So I did, just like you, I drew on the area that I knew, and another similarity, I drew on an occupation that I knew, which was truck driving, because when I was a kid, I was a truck driver. And so my protagonist is a driver.
Okay.
But just like you, my second novel, which is called All Hat, is set in an area that I don't know with an occupation that I don't know. And that is, it's set in South Dakota and on a cattle ranch. And what I did, and it was just a ball, I went and interviewed and, in fact, made rounds with a large animal vet, and I went around giving injections to cows and watching him, and it was... So that's the other side of it. It's just a kick to learn something new, and then, you know, I mean, like Larry McMurtry said, my job is to make shit up, and so that's that's kind of the fun part.
Yeah, I think that's exactly
you're doing
true.
That.
I think people get hung up too much on autobiographical aspects of fiction.
Yeah.
I think that they tend to read things into stories that they love and
of
attribute
course.
Things to writers. that the you know sometimes you're just sort of you're I don't know whether you're shocked or amused by wow you really thought I was that guy you know and I'm
exactly,
like not even close
exactly.
to that guy I honestly I made that up
yep.
So I think that's you know that's part of the craft of what we do and you know in a one sense it's actually quite a compliment.
I was going to say kudos to you when they say that.
Yeah, that would strike somebody as feeling so human that they attribute as well. You must have known this. I'm like, well,
right.
I knew that, and I adapted that, but the rest of
right.
it's just being a writer.
Sure. Yeah, it would be like an actor. You know, I think a great tribute would be. When you see them in person or see them in another role and say, holy cow, I didn't know they could be like that. Well,
yeah.
That's because they're an actor and we're writers.
And
well,
I did get to learn from the reverse side of it, I did get to live what it felt to be my character in the last month or so. I've actually gone ahead and recorded the album of songs that's in my book.
Oh, great.
So, in the novel, Riley has written a bunch of songs, and he goes out to Will's house, and they record this album that they never got to do 15 years before. And all of those songs
mm-hmm.
actually exist in real life. I wanted to write them so that I could then write about them from
sure.
a really knowledgeable place. And then after the book was done, on the last, like, 2 months or so, I've been recording the album, which is going to be done right about the same time the book comes out. So I have been struck at many moments through the process of just thinking to myself, I'm actually living that exact scene on page 180 where he goes
right.
into the studio and records The Color of Despair and they're all sitting around waiting for Will to decide. And I'm sitting there at my producer's house and in his studio and I got the headphones on and the guitar's ready and he's counting down and I'm like, this is exactly, it's so weird to think that.
It's sort of surreal.
Yeah, I made this guy up, but now I'm actually him in real life for a month.
Right. Well, good for you.
Which has been,
well, I'll tell you my experience. Yesterday I got to live something that I've thought about for a long time. That was my book launch party.
Yeah,
and
how'd that
it was
go?
Just, well, I can tell you after it was over, my wife came up to me and she said, you were in your element. And doggone it, I was. I've anticipated this, and it went great. I had about 100 people there. And it was all that I had hoped it would be. So I was real thrilled with that.
That's good. Do you have more events set up as we roll into the summer here?
I do. You know, I manage a Habitat for Humanity Restore, and a woman came in the other day and not surprisingly, the conversation turned to books, and it turns out that she owns a bookstore. So we set up that signing.
Perfect.
I'm going to Southern California next month, and we're setting up some stuff there. So, and
okay.
In fact, I know you're almost a neighbor of mine. You may know Linfield College. We're going to do a reading and an event in the fall. So
great.
Just some real fun stuff coming up. How about
yeah.
you?
So my book's out on June 11th. I'm going to be doing Powell's here in Portland on the 10th. And then
wow.
A reading in Sausalito in the Bay Area on the 13th. And then on the 17th,
mm-hmm.
I'll be in Los Angeles at Skylight Books in Las Feliz, which is funny because
that
was my neighborhood before when I lived there. And
right.
So it's in the neighborhood where the book takes place. So that's going to be a little weird. But it's going to be great fun. Have a lot of old friends coming to that. So doing a little West Coast thing, and then get back home and see what else the summer lines up for me.
Right. Well, I, a couple things. I want to say I hope we get to meet in person soon. I know we will at some point. And I don't think I mentioned the name of my book, which is There's a Somebody. And that title came from the old Gershwin song, There's a Somebody I'm Longing to See. And if you read the book, you'll know why.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the ebook is out in the next couple of days, so I'm looking forward to that.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And don't go without telling me about your cover. I just love that.
The cover was something that the publishers and I and the graphic designer had a number of conversations about. You know, it's a book about music, so the question becomes, how on the nose do you want your cover to be?
Exactly. I went through that.
So earlier incarnations had just a big photo of an electric guitar on the cover with the title. And I was like, you know, that's just it's not a rock and roll novel. It's a book that happens
right.
to have songs and music at the center, but that's not what the story is about, essentially. So I wanted to allude to that, but make it more subtle than that. And through a number of iterations of the cover and a number of conversations, we came to this idea of using the shape of a guitar as a design element rather than that would speak to it. If you sort of looked at it a certain way, you could recognize that it was a guitar. So we all kind of felt like that alluded more realistically to the way in which music is treated in the book. So that's
okay.
kind of where we landed on that image. I've gotten a lot of good feedback on it, so I think it turned out pretty well.
It looks terrific. It looks great. So I think we probably better wrap up, but like I say, I love the book, and I'm so anxious to meet you in person. Best of luck to you.
Yeah, it sounds great. Me too. Thanks for having me on. I would just add that if anybody wants to hear more about me or the book or the record, you can go to my website at robyardumian.com, and there's lots of good info there, and you can learn a little bit more about me and my stuff if you're interested.
Okay, and for me, if you go to the Facebook page, There's a Somebody, you'll see all that. Thank you, Rob.
All right, thanks, Steve.
Okay, see you later.